You're listening to an encore edition of Studio Tulsa recorded earlier this year.
Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Friendship is a complicated relationship full of emotion and support. Also, therapy and commiseration, just to name a few aspects. Ideally, of course, there's fun and shared experience. Sometimes, though, there's envy or trauma. How should we navigate friendships? Can we be friends with our boss, for example? Can men and women ever truly be friends? What about cliques? Do you avoid them or work hard to be included in them? Do you hold grudges when your friends irritate or betray you? Or is forgiveness a best practice? What about when a friend dies? My guest today answers these and many other questions in her new book, with a focus on the special nature of friendships among women. Friendship has a profound impact on our health and well-being, as she demonstrates in her book. Diane Barth is a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst in private practice in New York City. She holds a master's degree from Columbia University School of Social Work and analytic certification from the Psychoanalytic Institute of the Postgraduate Center. Currently, she teaches private study groups and often runs workshops around the country. Her articles have been published in a number of professional journals, and she's authored chapters in a number of books. Since 2010, she's written a blog for Psychology Today called Off the Couch, which offers thoughts about the therapeutic process and the dynamics of client-therapist interactions. Her new book about women's friendships is called I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. Psychotherapist and writer Diane Barth is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Diane Barth, welcome to Medical Monday. I want to start by asking you about friendship among women. And one of the chapters in your book, it's brought up by several of your interview subjects about quantity of friends. How important is it to have a lot of friends?
Not.
Okay, so it's really more quality than quantity is what you're getting at here.
Yes. Although even quality, it's an interesting thing because it what really, you know, we're in such a quantifying world these days that we think in terms of how many. But really what seems to be important is simply that you have some people that you have contact with that you're who give you a sense of feeling validated and seen. And so there's some evidence that even friendships who are that are not deep friendships or not what we think of as the ideal friendship can be really valuable and meaningful and even health-promoting.
Yeah, so say a little bit more about that. How are friendships health-promoting? I mean, it may be a little bit self-evident, but what does some of the research show us?
Well, actually, it's not as self-evident. I mean, you know, obviously you think, okay, I've got friends who make me feel better about myself, and I talk to friends who help me get through difficult situations. But there's research that, first of all, it seems that we are in some way programmed to seek out connections. And there's research that came out of Duke University that says that among unmarried patients with coronary heart disease, 85% of those with close friends live at least twice as long as those without those kinds of relationships. And a Kaiser Permanente study found that in a group of 9,000 people with breast cancer, that ties to relatives and friends predicted a lower death rate. But what they seem to have found is that it's not necessarily that you have to have these wonderful, deep connections that make us feel better. It's that friendships, even sort of neighbors who bring you food when you're not, you know, when you're not well, those kinds of connections apparently reduce stress, and they reduce stress, you know, physical, hormonal, you know this better than I do, but the kinds of chemicals that our bodies release when we're under stress are lessened when we have people who are paying attention to us. One of the studies said that it can be just, they're not 100% sure what all goes into it, but one study said that it can be just the fact that there's somebody there to take you to the doctor if you need a ride to the doctor. And I, all through I Know How You Feel, I have examples from the many wonderful women who I spoke to. And one of the really interesting ones was a young woman who got Lyme disease, which we have a lot of up here in the Northeast. And she was really incapacitated by it. And her best friend disappeared on her. wasn't there for her at all. But another woman who she sort of just knew casually started coming by, bringing food, hanging out with her to watch television, not necessarily talking and not necessarily and certainly not talking about anything deep or particularly meaningful. But she was just company and also did some of the tasks that she needed done. Mm-hmm. When she started to get better, this friend just sort of, the connection had been around the friend taking care of her. So that friendship sort of, it faded. It wasn't, nothing happened. It's just that they didn't have anything to connect around anymore. And she reconnected with the friend who had disappeared and asked her what had happened. And the friend said, "I just couldn't watch you be so helpless. I couldn't stand to be around you." So, you know, it looks like it's not like you have to have a very, very close friend or 17 very close friends or 190 friends or, you know, thousands of friends. That what's really important is that you have some connections with some human beings who help you get through whatever period it is you're getting through and help you manage the things you need to manage.
And I think, you know, that illustration you gave touches on it, but what are some of the qualities about female friendship that are distinct or that, you know, inspired you to write this book? I mean, the stereotype, I guess, or the, maybe we'll call it the generalization, is that men, and you write about this a little bit, you know, again, generalizing, men are more about process and maybe getting something done, whereas in general, women are in relationships maybe more about feeling and processing and just, you know, being there for one another and really listening. Is that a good place to start?
Sure, sure. I mean, that's actually where one of the places that I start. But I know how you feel. It's that I was at a dinner party and talking about, my husband was my biggest connector to other people in terms of, I tend to be a little bit shy and he's a very outgoing person. So he would say to people, "Oh, Diane's writing a book about women's friendships," and everybody would start talking. So at one dinner early in the process, one of the guys said, "I wish I had the kinds of friendships that you women have. I see my wife having these long talks with her friends where she can, you know, they don't even talk about anything that seems really important, but they just connect, and then they connect sort of on an emotional level." He said, "I have friends, but I don't feel like we have those kinds of deep emotional connections." That's the stereotype. And the other stereotype, of course, is that men do and women talk. I found that actually both of those stereotypes were wrong or were not. I mean, I didn't do scientific, statistically valid research. Mine is all anecdotal. But I talked to almost 200 people, 200 women and then more men, but almost 200 women all over the world, all over the country, all different sorts of socioeconomic backgrounds, educational backgrounds, racial, ethnic backgrounds. And what I heard was actually that there's a huge variety of friendships among women. And it appears to me that there's also a huge variety of friendships among men. And that, so you could probably, you know, if you feel comfortable doing this, I'd love to know your feeling about it. I talked to a lot of men who said they had really deep emotional connections to their friends, and I talked to a lot of women who said they didn't have those kinds of connections. They had friends they did things with, but they didn't have a group of women who were there, or even one woman who was like their person.
Well, and I also notice in that amongst the many people that you spoke with, there seemed to be those different types of friendships, even among, you know, that specific person you spoke with. In other words, there were some deep, intimate personal friendships, and then there were some just more companion-type friendships where they would go to hear lectures or something together.
Yes,
it was more
exactly
about the social activity than it was about the emotional sharing.
Exactly.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Diane Barth, who is a psychotherapist in New York City. She's also a longtime blogger at Psychology Today. And she's the author of the brand new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. And it's just out. And Diane, I wanted to ask you, you tackle a few sort of I would say, in this survey, you know, some special issues. So, for example, cliques or, you know, groups. So the title of the chapter is The Joy of Belonging, The Pain of Exclusion, Groups, Clubs, and Cliques. You know, what popped into my mind when I read this chapter was the movie Mean Girls, which is sort of a high school about belonging or trying to belong or wanting to belong or feeling like you're on the outside. And I thought you had some pretty interesting observations. So, I mean, what could you share about that?
Well, I think Mean Girls is the perfect example. There are there is often the longing to be part of a particular group and the feeling that if we are in that group, then we are good, we're smart, we're pretty, we're accepted, all the things that, you know, we long to be. And it starts usually in middle school, and it's really rough for a lot of girls in middle school because cliques tend to be part of what defines them is who they leave out. But they also have a purpose, which is that they are part of the process of helping girls, I mean, any group is part of the process of helping a kid start to separate from their family and start to emotionally and psychologically identify with their peers. The problem is, as Mean Girls, as the movie really shows, that, you know, sometimes you give up yourself in the process of connecting to a particular group. And I talked to... It was actually something that I was really interested in because I'm not a huge group person. And so I was really interested in particularly women who stayed in groups as they got older. And two women told me kind of wonderful stories about their groups. One told me that she had been part of a group since high school and that some of the people in the group went off to college together. And the group stayed very connected but was also very embracing. And so they brought in new people. As one person would connect to somebody new, they would just take in the new person. And as the women started to date and get involved with guys, they brought in the guys. And so the group, this is a group of women who are now in their mid-30s, and the group, what this woman told me is that the group has sort of subdivided into smaller groups. So some of them have gotten married and have children. Some of them are still single. Some of them are involved in long-term relationships but not marrying. Some of them are more involved in their careers and some are not. Some are really interested in music and some are not. And so the group has, you know, they've sort of subdivided into groups that are of interest to each of them. But they also get together a certain amount of times a year as a whole huge group. And she told me it's like, it is really like a family. It's like a huge extended family. But I also heard stories, which are unfortunately not uncommon, of people who wanted very much to be, even as adults, to join some group. So, for example, mom's groups can be really cliquish. And so sometimes mothers who have been working and then have decided to stay home with their kids told me about having troubles breaking into a group either in their neighborhood or at their child's school of moms who seem to have really circled the wagons in a way, and they had just become totally invested in each other and they were not embracing. And that can be very painful and can bring up all of those old feelings of being one of the not popular kids. It really takes a lot of work to manage that. I talked to one woman who said that she hung in there and actually started to make friends with somebody else who wasn't part of the in-group, and that they realized that the in-group was a very insecure group of women, and that they actually, as they connected to each other, began to connect to other people, and interestingly, to some of the women in that sort of closed group.
Well, let's shift, if we can for a second, from the more exclusive type of groups, cliques, to where the groups may be a lot less restrictive. And you write a little bit about this, about the advent of social media. I mean, we now, and this gets back a little bit to the quantity question, but let's leave that aside. Are social media friendships real friendships? I mean, or is it, you know, I guess for some people they are and some people they aren't. But what, I mean, how do you contextualize Facebook or, you know, Twitter or these other things, Click Clack or is it Yik Yak and those other
right,
things?
Right, right. And on and on, right?
Yeah.
I think what you said is exactly right. I think for some people, some of the social media is a way to stay connected. For many women who are living really busy, crazy lives, as many of us are doing these days, it seemed like being able to connect through Facebook or from through any of those other new and ever-increasing forms is a way of it's a lifesaver. It's a way of feeling like they're still in the world and it's connected to their friends even if they don't get a chance to see their friends. On the other hand, social media is a terrible place for increasing FOMO, the fear of missing out, the feeling that your friends are off doing something that you're not included in. They haven't even bothered to check to see if you were, you know, available. I talked to a mother and a daughter who had two completely different experiences of social media. So the mother told me that she found social media a wonderful way of staying in touch with her friends. She got to see pictures of her friends' grandchildren. She got to see what her friends were doing. They showed each other's gardens. I mean, there was really... many of her friends lived all over the country, so she didn't get to see them in person that much. The daughter, on the other hand, said that it had been very painful to her because her a friend had been talking to her. They had plans to go out, and then the friend said, oh, you know what, I can't do it. And then an hour later, she's online on social media, and she sees a picture of the friend with some other friends. And I heard a lot of those kinds of stories, that being left out can happen really badly on Facebook or on social media. But yes, I think that on the other hand, some of these connections look and feel superficial, and yet some of them look and feel to the people who are involved very deep and very connected.
Well, the example you just gave of the daughter who was feeling left out or, you know, had the, I guess, truly was missing out on an experience.
Yeah.
It reminds me of another story in the book about coworkers. So there was, and you have a chapter on this, but what about where, well, I guess let's just ask you that. I mean, how do you negotiate these boundaries at work with either coworkers or perhaps even better phrase, can you be friends with your boss? And you've written about this in the book and elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a really important question. And again, I'll tell you, one of the things that I loved about doing the research for and writing I Know How You Feel is that, in fact, if I was going to give it a title now, I would probably give it a different title because, in fact, we have so many different ways of being friends and of connecting to each other. So one of the things that I heard was that some people felt that they could not be friends with people at work because it was crossing boundaries. Other people had sort of what they defined as work friends, which were people who they really, really cared about, but they seldom saw them outside of work. Their family lives did not overlap at all, but they were people who they were extremely fond of and who they knew a lot about and who knew a lot about them. What I also heard is that the key word, no matter how you're doing it, is boundaries. That work friendships, I mean, no friendship should involve gossiping, but work friendships especially need to be, you have to be really, really careful not to say things that somebody else has told you in confidence. And that seems to be maybe, you know, quadrupled when you talk about relationships between a boss and a, you know, somebody under them. Because you can be friends with your boss, but if your boss tells you things that she doesn't want other people to know, you have to be really sure that you can guard that secret. And vice versa. If you are confiding in your boss, you have to be really sure that she's not at any point in any way put in a position of feeling like she's got information that is going to compromise her.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Diane Barth, who is a psychotherapist in New York City. She's a blogger for Psychology Today and author of the new book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. And Diane, we were talking about boundaries at work and friendships and the sometimes perilous nature of those. You wrote a piece in an online magazine, Quartz at Work. You had another piece just very recent about the Me Too movement, which can bring out both the best and worst of women's friendships. What did you mean by that?
Well, I actually think that the Me Too movement in some ways captures, well, the best and the worst of women's friendships, because on the one hand, it captures the importance of solidarity, and it's so important that women are saying, yeah, I know how you feel, or Me Too, or, you know, for so long women felt like they had to hide experiences of sexual harassment or abuse at work because they, or anywhere, because they felt like they were going to be blamed for what happened. And so the solidarity is just, I think, extremely important, and extremely important in terms of healing. You know, Monica Lewinsky wrote an article for Vanity Fair where that's really what she talks about, that the sense that she's had to work on her own, her feelings of culpability for something that she really, you know, she takes responsibility for what she did, but she feels that in some way she's also being told that she wasn't a terrible person now. On the other hand, we women sometimes have difficulties with conflict. And every time I start to say it that way, I stop myself, because I think men have troubles with conflict also. I think especially in the world we're living in right now, we are not good at disagreeing and exploring our disagreements. We are sort of like one way is right and the other way is wrong. But with the Me Too movement, it captures how hard it is for women to say, you know, I'm not sure I think you were really a victim here. Or I'm not sure, or if a woman defends a guy. So like Margaret Atwood defended, the author Margaret Atwood defended a colleague at her university, and she got terrible flack for that, because we haven't figured out a way to make space for differences of opinion, or different ways of thinking about things, or different ways of looking at things.
Well, it certainly doesn't do justice to talk about Me Too and then switch to kind of normal, I guess, heterosexual relationships. But I want to ask you, really, from your research, I mean, can men and women be friends? And I guess even more directly, you have a nice bit about this in the book about, is it okay for your spouse to be your best friend?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was pretty
interesting. I actually think that's totally connected to the Me Too movement.
Oh, good.
I think that is part of what... I think it's part of what we're struggling with. And my feeling is that, yes, men and women can be friends. And I talked to so many women who said that their husbands or their wives were their best friends, and that they that was who they turned to for all of the kinds of nurturing and affirmation and exploration and thinking that they needed in their lives. I think the answer, the real issue is, can we, friendship is about relationships, and can we respect each other, and can we have boundaries with each other, and can we manage sometimes confusing feelings even within a friendship? So, of course, one of the things for men and women is, what happens if you're friends with a guy, or a guy's friends with a woman, and sexual things come up. And I found that many, many, many of the women I talked to, and the guys I talked to, because that was something I did want to hear from both sides, said that the struggle was to be able to decide for yourself that the sexual part of the relationship was not where you were going to put your energy. that, yeah, sometimes you have a really good friend and you have sexual feelings for them, but that's not where the energy goes in that relationship. And then there were plenty of people who told me that they were friends with somebody. Actually, one woman told me that she was very, very good friends with a guy. They had tried to turn it into being lovers and had been totally unsuccessful, but had both agreed that they would go back to being friends if it didn't work.
Well, you actually address the issue of, female friendship throughout the book, but so there's a chapter on sexual tension in those relationships.
Yes.
And I guess if you could summarize some of those findings, there of course was the sort of, I guess, conventional wisdom, I guess you say, bisexual through college or lesbian,
right,
until graduation,
right.
Something
until graduation,
like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I guess it's just different for everybody, right?
I think so. One of the things I was really interested in, I did talk to a number of women who told me, one woman who said that she and her best friend had explored kissing with each other when they were older adolescents, and that they had, that it had been a sexual experience, but that she was not gay and her friend was gay. And that that had been something they'd had to then move through, because it had been one thing for her and something else for the friend. What I was also really interested in is that women look at each other's bodies, and we look at each other's bodies in a competitive way. We're comparing our body to somebody else's body. We look at each other to get ideas about things we might want to do in terms of clothes or hair or nail polish or whatever. But this was much harder for women to talk about, but I think that there's also a sexual piece there, that we may be attracted to other women physically in ways that we certainly don't talk about, we don't let ourselves think about, and that it is one more of those pieces that I think that if we could name it and normalize it, not necessarily talk about it with a friend, but just know that it's a perfectly normal human response to a person that you care about or that you want to be near or that you admire, that we would be a lot richer if we could integrate that into our sense of who we are and who our friends are.
Well, it's very well written. It's an easy
you.
And enjoyable read. And the name of it is I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives, which can have a big impact on your health. And it's by my guest today, Diane Barth, who has been a psychotherapist in New York City for more than 30 years. Also a longtime blogger. She writes the Off the Couch blog for Psychology Today. Diane Barth, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, John, thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.